You're listening to All Things Cage at Wave Farm's WGXC 90.7 FM Radio for Open Ears. I'm your host, Laura Kuhn, director of the John Cage Trust, and my guest this week is once again John Cage, reading a lengthy excerpt from his Communication, one of the three lectures he performed at Darmstadt along with Indeterminacy and Changes in 1958. This recording is little known and is the only one of the three lectures held in audio form in the Darmstadt archives. Sadly, it's incomplete, missing its first few minutes. If you'll indulge me, however, I'll simply read the beginning of Communication before we settle into Cage's reading, which will pick up exactly where I leave off. This is the best recording we have of this work at the John Cage Trust, which was recorded on September 9th, 1958, in Darmstadt with pianist David Tudor, who performs either simultaneously or through interpolation from Christian Wolff's For Piano with Preparations from 1957 and from Bo Nilsson's Cantatatum from 1958. Cage's first appearance in Darmstadt was a red-letter event in the history of music, and as one critic wrote, with his three lectures, Cage cracked open the little world of contemporary music, sowing the seeds for a rich, burgeoning, heterogeneous landscape of sound with many different concepts of what music is and can be. Nichi Nichi, Koroko Nichi, begins John Cage. Every day is a beautiful day. What if I ask 32 questions? What if I stop asking now and then? Would that make things clear? Is communication something made clear? What is communication? Music, what does it communicate? Is what's clear to me clear to you? Is music just sounds? Then what does it communicate? Is a truck passing by music? If I can see it, do I have to hear it too? If I don't hear it, does it still communicate? If, while I see it, I can't hear it, but hear something else, say an egg beater, because I'm inside looking out, does the truck communicate or the egg beater? Which communicates? Which is more musical, a truck passing by a factory or a truck passing by a music school? Are the people inside the school musical and the ones outside unmusical? What if the ones inside can't hear very well? Would that change my question? Do you know what I mean when I say inside the school? Are sounds just sounds or are they Beethoven? People aren't sounds, are they? Is there such a thing as silence? Even if I get away from people, do I still have to listen to something? Say I'm off in the woods. Do I have to listen to a stream babbling? Is there always something to hear, never any peace and quiet? If my head is full of harmony, melody, and rhythm, what happens to me when the telephone rings? To my peace and quiet, I mean. And if it was European harmony, melody, and rhythm in my head, what has happened to the history of, say, Javanese music, with respect, that is to say, to my head? Are we getting anywhere asking questions? Where are we going? Is this the 28th question? Are there any important questions? How do you need to cautiously proceed in dualistic terms? Do I have two more questions? And now do I have none? Now that I've asked 32 questions, can I ask 44 more? I can, but may I? Why must I go on asking questions? Is there any reason in asking why? Would I ask why if questions were not words but were sounds? If words are sounds, are they musical or are they just noises? If sounds are noises, but not words, are they meaningful? Are they musical? Say there are two sounds and two people, and one of each is beautiful. Is there between all four any communication? And if there are rules, who made them, I ask you? Does it begin somewhere, I mean, and if so, where does it stop? What will happen to me or to you if we have to be somewhere where beauty isn't? I ask you, sometime two sounds happening in time, what will happen to our experience of hearing? Yours, mine, our ears, hearing? What will happen if sounds being beautiful stop sometime, and the only sounds to hear are not beautiful to hear but are ugly? What will happen to us? Would we ever be able to get so we thought that ugly sounds were beautiful? If we drop beauty, what have we got? Have we got truth? Have we got religion? Do we have a mythology? Would we know what to do with one if we had one? Have we got a way to make money? And if money is made, will it be spent on music? If Russia spends $60 million for the Brussels Fair, lots of it for music and dance, and America spends one-tenth of that, $6 million, does that mean that 1 out of 10 Americans is as musical and kinesthetic as all the Russians put together? If we drop money, what have we got? Since we haven't yet dropped truth, where shall we go looking for it? Didn't we say we weren't going, or did we just ask where we were going? If we didn't say we weren't going, why didn't we? If we had any sense in our heads, wouldn't we know the truth instead of going around looking for it? How otherwise would we, as they say, be able to drink a glass of water? We know, don't we? Everybody else's religion, mythology, and philosophy, and metaphysics, backwards and forwards. So what need would we have for one of our own if we had one? But we don't, do we? But music, do we have any music? Wouldn't it be better to just drop music too? Then what would we have? Jazz? What's left? Do you mean to say it's a purposeless play? Is that what it is when you get up and hear the first sound of each day? Is it possible that I could go on monotonously asking questions forever?
Would I have to know how many questions I was going to ask? Would I have to know how to count in order to ask questions? Do I have to know when to stop? Is this the one chance we have to be alive and ask a question? How long will we be able to be alive? Contemporary music is not the music of the future, nor the music of the past, but simply music present with us, this moment, now, this now moment. Something remarkable has happened. I was asking questions. Now I'm quoting from a lecture I gave years ago. Of course, I will ask some more questions later on, but not now. I have quoting to do. That moment is always changing. I was silent. Now I am speaking. How can we possibly tell what contemporary music is, since now we're not listening to it? We're listening to a lecture about it, and that isn't it. This is tongue wagging. Removed as we are this moment from contemporary music, we are only thinking about it. Each one of us is thinking his own thoughts, his own experience, and each experience is different, and each experience is changing. And while we are thinking, I am talking, and contemporary music is changing. Like life, it changes. If it were not changing, it would be dead. And of course, for some of us, sometimes it is dead, but at any moment it changes and is living again. Talking for a moment about contemporary milk. At room temperature, it is changing, goes sour, etc., and then a new bottle, etc., unless by separating it from its changing by powdering it or refrigeration, which is a way of slowing down its liveliness. That is to say, museums and academies are ways of preserving. We temporarily separate things from life, from changing, but at any moment destruction may come suddenly, and then what happens is fresher. When we separate music from life, what we get is art, a compendium of masterpieces. With contemporary music, when it is actually contemporary, we have no time to make that separation which protects us from living, and so contemporary music is not so much art as it is life, and anyone making it no sooner finishes one of it than he begins making another, just as people keep on washing dishes, brushing their teeth, getting sleepy, and so on. Very frequently, no one knows that contemporary music is or could be art. He simply thinks it was irritating. Irritating one way or another, that is to say, keeping us from ossifying. For any one of us, contemporary music is or could be a way of living. Several stories occur to me that I should like to interpolate in the same way, by the way, that while I am writing this, that I am now talking, the telephone keeps ringing, and then contemporary conversation takes place instead of this particular way of preparing a lecture. The first story is from the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. His living and talking had impressed a musician who began to think that he should give up music and become a disciple of Ramakrishna. But when he proposed this, Ramakrishna said, "By no means. Remain a musician. Music is a means of rapid transportation." Rapid transportation, that is, to life everlasting, that is to say, to life, period. Another story is, when I was first aware that I was to give this talk, I consulted the Book of Changes and obtained by tossing coins the hexagram to influence, to stimulate. Six at the top means the influence shows itself in the jaws, cheeks, and tongue. And the commentary says the most superficial way of trying to influence others is through talk that has nothing real behind it. The influence produced by such mere tongue wagging must necessarily remain insignificant. However, I find myself in disagreement with the commentary. I see no necessity to put something real behind tongue wagging. I do not see that tongue wagging is any more significant or insignificant than anything else. It seems to me that it is simply a matter of going on talking, which is neither significant nor insignificant, nor good nor bad, but simply happening to be the way I am right now living, which is giving a lecture in Illinois, which brings us back to contemporary music. But taking off again and returning to the Book of Changes, the hexagram on grace, which is the hexagram on art, discusses the effect of a work of art as though it were a light shining on top of a mountain, penetrating to a certain extent the surrounding darkness. That is to say, art is described as being illuminating, and the rest of life as being dark. Naturally, I disagree. If there were a part of life dark enough to keep out of it a light from art, I would want to be in that darkness, fumbling around if necessary, but alive. And I rather think that contemporary music would be there in the dark too, bumping into things, knocking others over, and in general adding to the disorder that characterizes life if it is opposed to art, rather than adding to the order and stabilized truth, beauty, and power that characterize a masterpiece if it is opposed to life. And is it? It is. Masterpieces and geniuses go together, and when by running from one to the other we make life safer than it actually is, we're apt never to know the dangers of contemporary music. Or even to be able to drink a glass of water. To have something be a masterpiece, you have to have enough time to classify it and make it classical. But with contemporary music, there is no time to do anything like classifying. All you can do is suddenly listen. In the same way that when you catch cold, all you can do is suddenly sneeze. Unfortunately, European thinking has brought it about that actual things that happen, such as suddenly listening or suddenly sneezing, are not considered profound. In the course of a lecture last winter at Columbia, Suzuki said that there was a difference between Oriental thinking and European thinking. That in European thinking, things are seen as causing one another and having effects, whereas in Oriental thinking, This seeing of cause and effect is not emphasized, but instead one makes an identification with what is here and now. He then spoke of two qualities. Unimpededness and interpenetration. Now this unimpededness is seeing that in all of space, each thing and each human being is at the center, and furthermore, that each one being at the center is the most honored one of all. Interpenetration means that each one of the most honored ones of all is moving out in all directions, penetrating and being penetrated by every other one, no matter what the time or what the space. So that when one says that there is no cause and effect, what is meant is that there are an incalculable infinity of causes and effects, that in fact each and everything in all of time and space is related to each and every other thing in all of time and space. This being so, there is no need to cautiously proceed in dualistic terms of success and failure, or the beautiful and the ugly, or good and evil, but rather simply to walk on, not wondering, to quote Meister Eckhart, am I right or doing something wrong? This is the second Tuesday in September of 1958, and I still have quite a lot to say. I'm nowhere near the end. I have four questions I must ask. If, as we have dropped music, does that mean we have nothing to listen to? Don't you agree with Kafka when he wrote, psychology, never again? If you had to put on 10 fingers the music you would take with you if you were going to the North Pole, what would you put? Is it true there are no questions that are really important? Here's a little information you may find informative about the information theory. Fourier analysis allows a function of time or any other independent variable to be expressed in terms of periodic frequency components. The frequency components are overall properties of the entire signal. By means of a Fourier analysis, one can express the value of a signal at any point in terms of the overall frequency properties of the signal, or vice versa. One can obtain these overall properties from the values of the signal at its various points. What did I say? Where is the should when they say you should have something to say? Actually, when you drop something, it's still with you, wouldn't you say? Where would you drop something to get it completely away? Why do you not do as I do, letting go of each thought as though it were void? Why do you not do as I do, letting go of each thought as though it were rotten wood? Why do you not do as I do, letting go of each thought as though it were a piece of stone? Why do you not do as I do, letting go of each thought as though it were the cold ashes of a fire long dead, or else just making the slight response suitable to the occasion? Do you really think that the discovery that a measurable entity exists, namely the energy which can measure mechanical, electrical, thermal, or any other kind of physical activity, and can measure potential as well as actual activity, greatly simplifies thinking about physical phenomena? Do you agree with Boulez when he says what he says? Are you getting hungry? Why should you? You know more or less what you're going to get. Will Boulez be there, or did he go away when I wasn't looking? Why do you suppose the number 12 was given up, but the idea of the series wasn't? Or was it? And if not, why not? In the meantime, would you like to hear the very first performance of Christian Wolff's For Piano with Preparations? Thank you.
Thank you.
What in heaven's name are they going to serve us for dinner? And what happens afterward? More music? Living or dead, that's the big question. When you get sleepy, do you go to sleep? Or do you lie awake? Why do I have to go on asking questions? Is it the same reason I have to go on writing music? But it's clear, isn't it, I'm not writing music just now. Then why do they call me a composer if all I do is ask questions? If one of us says that all 12 tones should be in a row and another says they shouldn't, which one of us is right? What if a B-flat, as they say, just comes to me? How can I get it to come to me of itself, not just pop up out of my memory, taste, and psychology? How? Do you know how? And if I did, or somebody else did find a way to let a sound be itself, would everybody within earshot be able to listen to it? Why is it so difficult for so many people to listen? Why do they start talking when there is something to hear? Do they have their ears not on the sides of their heads, but situated inside their mouths so that when they hear something, their first impulse is to start talking? The situation should be made more normal, don't you think? Why don't they keep their mouths shut and their ears open? Are they stupid? And if so, why don't they try to hide their stupidity? Were bad manners acquired when knowledge of music was acquired? Does being musical make one automatically stupid and unable to listen? Then don't you think one should put a stop to studying music? Where are your thinking caps? We're passing through time and space. Our ears are in excellent condition. A sound is high or low, soft or loud, of a certain time, lasts a certain length of time, and has an envelope. Is it high? Is it low? Is it in the middle? Is it soft? Is it loud? Are there two? Are there more than two? Is it a piano? Why isn't it? Was it an airplane? Is it a noise? Is it music? Is it softer than before? Is it supersonic? When will it stop? What's coming? Is it time? Is it very short, very long, just? Medium. If I had something to see, would it be theater? Is sound enough? What more do I need? Don't I get it whether I need it or not? Is it a sound? Then again, is it music? Is music, the word I mean, is that a sound? If it is music music? Is the word music music? Does it communicate anything? Must it? If it's high, does it? If it's low, does it? If it's in the middle, does it? If it's soft, does it? If it's loud, does it? If it's an interval, does it? What is an interval? Is an interval a chord? Is a chord an aggregate? Is a aggregate a constellation? What's a constellation? How many sounds are there altogether? 1 million? 10,000? 88? Do I have to ask 10 more? Do I? Why? Why do I? Did I decide to ask so many? Wasn't I taking a risk? Was I? Why was I? Will it never stop? Why won't it? There is no such thing as silence. Get thee to an anechoic chamber, and here, there, your nervous system. In operation, and here, there, your blood in circulation. I have nothing to say, and I am saying it. Would it be too much to ask if I asked 33 more? Who's asking? Is it I who ask? Don't I know my own mind? Then why do I ask if I don't know? Then it's not too much to ask, right? Then tell me, do you prefer Bach to Beethoven? And why? Would you like to hear Cantitaten by Boel Nielsen, whether it's performed for the first time or not? Has anyone seen Meister Eckhart lately? Do you think serious music is serious enough? Is a seventh chord inappropriate in modern music? What about fifths and octaves? What if the seventh chord was not a seventh chord? Doesn't it seem silly to go on asking questions when there's so much to do that's really urgent? But we're halfway through, aren't we? Shall we buck up? Are we in agreement that the field of music needs to be enlivened? Do we disagree? On what? Communication? If I have two sounds, are they related? If someone is nearer one of them than he is to the second, is he more related to the first one? What about sounds that are too far away for us to hear them? Sounds are just vibrations, isn't that true? Part of a vast range of vibrations, including radio waves, light, cosmic rays, isn't that true? Why didn't I mention that before? Shall we praise God from whom all blessings flow? Is a sound a blessing? I repeat, is a sound a blessing? I repeat, would you like to hear Cantitaten by Boel Nielsen, whether it's performed for the first time or not? Thank you. Belgians asked me about the avant-garde in America, and this is what I told them. In the United States, there are as many ways of writing music as there are composers. There is also no available information as to what is going on. There is no magazine concerned with modern music. Publishers are not inquisitive. The societies which actively exist, Broadcast Music Incorporated, American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, are concerned with economics, currently engaged in an important lawsuit. In New York City, the League of Composers and the International Society for Contemporary Music have fused. The new organization representing the current interest in consolidating the acquisitions of Schoenberg and Stravinsky. This circle has no doubt an avant-garde, but it is a cautious one, refusing risk. Its most accomplished and adventurous representative is probably Milton Babbitt, who in certain works has applied serial method to the several aspects of sound. The works for magnetic tape by Luning and Usachevsky Louis and B.B. Baron are not properly termed avant-garde, since they maintain conventions and accepted values. The young study with neoclassicists so that the spirit of the avant-garde infecting them induces a certain dodecaphony. In this social darkness, therefore, the work of Earl Brown, Martin Feldman, and Christian Wolff continues to present a brilliant light, for the reason that at the several points of notation, performance, and audition, action is provocative. None of these uses serial method. Brown's notation in space, equal to time, tends currently to fine precision of directive. Wolff's introduction in durations of split and partial gruppettos in tempi that of zero tends oppositely. The graphs of Feldman give within limits extreme freedom of action to the performer. They also, the Belgians that is, asked me whether the American avant-garde followed the same direction as the European one, and this is what I told them. The American avant-garde, recognizing the provocative character of certain European works of Pierre Boulez, Karlheinz Stockhausen, Henri Pucerbo, Nielsen, Bengtan Breus, as in its concerts presented them in performances notably by David Tudor, pianist. That these works are serial in method diminishes somewhat the interest they enjoin. But the thoroughness of the method's application, bringing a situation removed from conventional expectation, frequently opens the ear. However, the European works present an harmoniousness, a drama, or a poetry, which, referring more to their composers than to their hearers, move in directions not shared by the American ones. Many of the American works envisage each auditor as central, so that the physical circumstances of a concert do not oppose audience to performers, but dispose the latter around among the former, bringing a unique acoustical experience to each pair of ears. Admittedly, a situation of this complexity is beyond control, yet it resembles a listener's situation before and after a concert, daily experience, that is. It appears such a continuum is not part of the European objective, since it dissolves the difference between art and life. To the unexperienced, the difference between the Europeans and the Americans lies in that the latter include more silence in their works. In this view, the music of Nielsen appears as intermediate, that of Boulez and of the author as in opposition. This superficial difference is also profound. When silence, generally speaking, is not in evidence, the will of the composer is. Inherent silence is equivalent to denial of the will. Taking a nap, I pound the rice. Nevertheless, constant activity may occur, having no dominance of will in it. Neither is syntax nor structure, but analogous to the sum of nature, it will have arisen purposelessly. It's getting late, isn't it? I still have two things to do, so what I want to know is, would you like to hear Conti Tatin by Bo Nielsen, whether it's performed for the first time or not? Thank you. I must read a little from an article by Christian Wolff. Here's what he says. Some qualities, monotony of simplicity, delicacy, strength, complexity. In the latter, it is a tendency to the neutralization of observably measurable units. For continuous change results in a certain sameness. Alter continually the dynamics of each single sound of a longer sequence of sounds, and you get nowhere in terms of dynamics, though all possible dynamics will be present. So the static character of much of this music. It goes in no particular direction. Repetition is not deliberate, nor is reminiscing. Often the structure of a piece is circular. The succession of its parts is variable, as for example in Poussin's Exercice de Piano and Stockhausen's Klavierstück 11. In Cage's recent work, the notation itself can be circular, the succession of notes on the page not necessarily indicating their sequence in time, the order in which they are to be performed. One may have to read notes in a circle, in two voices going in opposite directions simultaneously. An aspect of time dissolves. And the Europeans often view organization as global, whereby beginnings and ends are not points of a line, but limits of a piece's material. For example, pitch ranges, possible combinations of timbres, which may be touched at any time during the piece. The boundaries of the piece are expressed not at moments of time which mark a succession, but as margins of a spatial projection of the total possible structure. And now, I have to read a story from Kwangtse, and then I'm finished. Book 11, Part 2, Section 4, Paragraph 5. Yun Qiang, rambling to the east, having been borne along on a gentle breeze, suddenly encountered Hung Mung, who was rambling about, slapping his buttocks and hopping like a bird. Amazed at the sight, Yun Qiang stood reverentially and said to the other, "Venerable sir, who are you, and why are you doing this?" Hung Mung went on slapping his buttocks and hopping like a bird, but replied, "I am enjoying myself." Yun Qiang said, "I wish to ask you a question." Hung Mung lifted up his head, looked at the stranger, and said, "Pooh." Yun Qiang, however, continued, "The breath of heaven is out of harmony. The breath of earth is bound up. The six elemental influences do not act in concord. The four seasons do not observe their proper times. Now I wish to blend together the essential qualities of those six influences in order to nourish all living things. How shall I go about it?" Hung Mung slapped his buttocks, hopped about, and shook his head, saying, "I don't know. I don't know." Yun Qiang could not pursue his question, but 3 years afterward, when again rambling in the east, as he was passing by the wilds of Sung, he happened to meet Hung Mung. Delighted with the rencontre, he hastened to him and said, "Have you forgotten me, O heaven? Have you forgotten me, O heaven?" At the same time, he bowed twice with his head to the ground, wishing to receive his instructions. Hung Meng said, "Wandering listlessly about, I know not what I seek. Carried on by a wild impulse, I know not where I am going. I wander about in the strange manner which you have seen, and see that nothing proceeds without method and order. What more should I know?" Yun Qiang replied, "I also seem carried on by an aimless influence, and yet the people follow wherever I go. I cannot help their doing so. But now, as they thus imitate me, I wish to hear a word from you." The other said, "What disturbs the regular method of heaven comes into collision with the nature of things, prevents the accomplishment of the mysterious operation of heaven, scatters the herds of animals, makes the birds sing at night, is calamitous to vegetation and disastrous to all insects. All this is owing, I conceive, to the error of governing men. What then," said Yun Qiang, "shall I do?" "Ah," said the other, "you will only injure them. I will leave you in my dancing way and return to my place." Yun Qiang rejoined, "It has been difficult to get this meeting with you, O heaven. I should like to hear from you a word more." Hung Meng said, "Ah, your mind needs to be nourished. Do you only take the position of doing nothing? And things will of themselves become transformed. Neglect your body, cast out from you your power of hearing and sight, forget what you have in common with things, cultivate a grand similarity with the chaos of the plastic ether, unloose your mind, set your spirit free, be still as if you had no soul. Of all the multitude of things, everyone returns to its root and does not know that it is doing so. They all are as in the state of chaos, and during all their existence, they do not leave it. If they knew that they were returning to their root, they would be consciously leaving it. They do not ask its name, they do not seek to spy out their nature, and thus it is that things come to life of themselves." Yun Qiang said, "Heaven, you have conferred on me the knowledge of your operation and revealed to me the mystery of it. All my life I had been seeking for it, and now I have obtained it." He then bowed twice with his head to the ground, arose, took his leave, and walked away.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.